1340 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.
CBS News Brief. The death toll from Friday's flash flooding in South Texas stands at 110. Officials say that more than 160 people are unaccounted for, among them five from Camp Mystic. Lily Kummerfeld was in a different bunk.
I feel guilty that we were so safe and oblivious while they were living hell on earth.
The Supreme Court cleared the way for the Trump administration to resume mass federal layoffs. Legal contributor Jessica Levinson.
My understanding is not just tens of thousands of workers, but actually up to 100,000 different workers. This would be a significant restructuring of the executive branch.
L.A. has joined a lawsuit to stop the Trump administration from conducting ICE raids there. City attorney Heidi Fieldstein Soto.
These unconstitutional roundups and raids cannot be allowed to continue. They cannot become the new normal.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
WAUK News brought to you by the Summer Splash Dog Show at the Waukesha County Fairgrounds, July 25th to July 27th. Fun for the whole family. WaukeshaSummerSplash.com.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. A coalition of Milwaukee faith leaders, immigrant advocates, and labor groups are calling for charges against Judge Hannah Dugan to be dropped. They're gathering today for what's called a vigil at the federal courthouse. Organizers say the charges are baseless and warn that punishing judges could have a chilling effect on the justice system. Supporters say they want to show solidarity with Judge Dugan. A magistrate judge recommended Monday that the case should go before a jury. Milwaukee wants the public to become dumping detectives. A new City of Milwaukee website now lets residents help identify illegal dumpers caught on camera with a $1,000 reward for successful tips. The move is part of a citywide push using hidden cameras and higher fines to tackle what officials call a crime of laziness. There's a recent report about emergency services across the state, and it isn't good, especially in rural areas. There is a new program that may provide some relief. Terry Barr has more.
If you're facing an emergency, you want to know you can count on your local EMS and firefighters to help. But the results from a survey of Wisconsin fire chiefs shows there are problems, and it ranges from responding to calls with less staff than required and not having enough funding to pay the expenses. UW just created a rural EMS outreach program.
Service that's provided by the government. There's different ideas on how to fix it, but there's a general consensus that there's a lot of challenges in this space. There's a lot of funding issues in this space, and there's a workforce issue in this space. That's agreed upon. Just how do you get to those solutions varies a little bit.
James Small is now tasked with working with all sides through these challenges. His goal will be to increase the future sustainability of these important rural services.
And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
The Brewers and the Dodgers, Game 3 today. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens from AmFam Field in Milwaukee, where the Brewers and Dodgers are wrapping up their series. The Brewers winning again last night 3-1. Rookie pitcher Jacob Mizorowski throwing fastballs over 100 miles an hour. What was it like facing the Miz for the first time? Dodgers manager Dave Roberts.
We hadn't seen him before, and the stuff's really good. The fastball's pretty special, and, you know, it's hard to find silver lining when the guy strikes out 12 guys.
The game televised nationally on TBS, announcer Brian Anderson interviewing manager Pat Murphy live during the game when he let out a swear word over the air by accident.
Murph, thanks for spending some time with us. We got to get your thoughts, what you've seen so far from your flamethrower, Jacob Mizorowski. Pretty elite stuff here as Monasterio sends one to left.
Get out of here.
It's deep. It's caught at the wall.
Yeah, it looks like you get it off the end a little bit.
That's the Brewers manager, Pat Murphy. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Plenty of sunshine today. We'll get to 78 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the northeast at 5 to 15. Clear tonight, 63. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 78. We do have a chance of scattered thunderstorms on Friday, with a high of 84. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 69.
Bring the whole family to the Waukesha Kennel Club Summer Splash Dog Shows at the Waukesha County Fairgrounds, July 25th to 27th.
Enjoy exciting events like dock diving, fast cat racing, obedience, and the thrilling Best of Show competition. It's fun for all ages. Check out the vendors and find the best pet supplies for your furry friends. It's the perfect weekend for dog lovers and families alike. Sponsored by Royal Canin at 540 AM WAUK. Visit WaukeshaSummerSplash.com for all the details.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Years ago, I had some, I think I had a rainbow. No, it was a shirt. It was given to me and I wore it because I support all people. And a friend of mine, sure, you want to walk around in that? You know, a t-shirt, people might think. I'm like, people might think I'm a human being that supports other human beings. I wear sports jerseys sometimes. No one ever says, are you worried people are going to think you're on the Cubs?
I don't think anyone would think that, though.
Oh, you haven't seen my curveball.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, women continue having problems accessing their health care. We're going to talk about that with Megan Kling. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. Real news, great conversation from Milwaukee and beyond. 540 WAUK.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 8:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday morning, July 9th. Parker Olson in Madison Studio A2, meteorologist Brittany Merlot and Earl Ingram all standing by here. Coming up tomorrow in our 8 o'clock hour, we'll be talking to Congressman Mark Pocan. Coming up later today in this 8 o'clock hour, we will be talking to State Senator Kel DeRoyes. We will also have Melissa Baldoff here with this week's climate check and James Kelly with an update on some of the stories he's following in western Wisconsin. But first, let's bring in meteorologist Brittany Merlot with that update on the forecast, because it is gorgeous everywhere, or is it just me? Is it just the CPAP machine? I'm getting enough oxygen now. I just had a great night's sleep. Is there only gorgeous weather here? Am I that, rose colored glasses? Or everybody else getting this too?
It's mostly you. I mean, western parts and southern parts. So you are in the good spot right now.
Okay.
So this is good for you, Pat. How was last night? Just amazing.
Oh, I feel so much better. I mean, honestly, I thought it was going to go the other way. I would be like draggy and go, I couldn't get used to the machine. It was noisy and it was strangling me. And instead it was exactly as everybody told me it would be. That you feel better, you feel refreshed. Sherry, instead of being concerned that she wasn't hearing me breathe, it was now off-putting that there was no snoring, that it was so quiet. And that's a better problem to have. I think we all agree. So
absolutely. God, I'm so happy for you guys.
Oh, I'm no regrets about this decision whatsoever. So yes, it is gorgeous here, and I hope it spreads to others. Tell us whether it will or not.
Yes, Pat's joy will spread to the entire state. The sunshine will make it to every single person today. But there are some feisty clouds still sticking around, especially into central parts and northern parts of the state. We are still looking at dense fog in places, too, especially in Mosinee, Juneau, and Boscobel, even into Siren, Wisconsin. So patchy fog out there, a dense fog advisory still in effect until 10 a.m. for Bayfield, Ashland, and Iron counties. But of course, that high pressure system is going to dominate today and most of tomorrow. So plenty of sunshine on tap. Highs today will rise to the mid-80s for a lot of us south and west. For the north and east, mid-70s today. We are going to stay sunny and dry, like I said, tomorrow too. It's going to get a little bit more muggy though, especially into the western areas and down south in the state. It's going to start to feel humid, mid-80s statewide tomorrow. And then we are looking at some showers and storms moving in possibly tomorrow afternoon in the southern half of the state and then taking over for Friday. And it could be pretty heavy at times. There are places that could see 2 inches of rain, maybe more. And of course, these storms are kind of packing a punch with some heavy brief downpours, where even yesterday we saw 1.5 inches into Waukesha area, kind of creating some issues out there too. So be careful out there. Don't let those highway puddles pull you in.
No, not at all. All right. Mm-mm. Brittany, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
All right. A reminder, you can always follow what we do at Up North News by signing up for our daily newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com. Click subscribe up there in the top banner for our weekday newsletters and my Sunday morning one that focuses on Wisconsin politics. All right, let's visit with Earl Ingram. A couple of different things going on as he covers matters in Southeast Wisconsin for Civic Media, not the least of which is a podcast series that we haven't talked about for a while that we will kind of get promoted here in the next few minutes. But more importantly, we were talking last week. Earl was getting set for working a football camp with Gilbert Brown. And, you know, the weather's been nice. Earl, good morning. Did you get the camp underway?
Yeah, we kicked it off yesterday with over 220 young people ages 6 to about 20 years old, two separate camps, both 4 hours apiece, starting at 8 a.m. and the first one to 12, and then we take a two-hour break, and then those from 13 through 20, from 2 o'clock until 6 o'clock. And so we were honored to have the Hall of Fame Green Bay Packer Leroy Butler show up yesterday and just really give a monstrous speech, along with the mayor, the chief of police, and other dignitaries who grace us every day.
You know, I'm painting with a bit of a broad brush here, but I hope folks get the main point. There are pro athletes who are real divas. They are really full of themselves, and they don't do a lot for others. There are other pro athletes who never forgot where their roots. They never forgot how much work it was to get where they are. And you sometimes wonder at these motivational conferences, why are there so many athletes there? Because there are certain athletes who are just that way. They've taken all that they've done, and now they're ready to channel it into motivating others. And that certainly sounds like what Leroy Butler was doing yesterday.
Well, people may not know it, but Leroy Butler is from Jacksonville, Florida. Gilbert Brown is from Detroit. And their connection to the city of Milwaukee is unbelievable. The Green Bay Packers aren't situated in Milwaukee, but the two of them have made a signature commitment to the city of Milwaukee and the Central City children and families ever since they were Green Bay Packers. So they've left an indelible footprint in our communities, and we are better having Leroy Butler, Gilbert Brown do the things that they've been doing now for the past 15 years in our community.
So what did you enjoy most about having the camp get fired up again and having all those kids getting busy? What was the best part of your day?
Well, it brought me back to, I'm a guy who ran the largest youth tackle football program in the state for 20 years. And here in the city of Milwaukee, children ages 6 to 14, we had four young guys move on to play pro football, and countless numbers of them play in major universities and state universities across the state. And so missing that, I've been away from it for 4 years and 5 years, and just being back on the football field around football and the fraternity that football is. And so just being back around it is enough for me.
I can totally see that as well. And I think we may have touched on this last week, but I definitely want to hit it again, and that is the whole notion of these kinds of organized programs, the structure, the activities that you do together. And that is not, you know, something that's isolated to, say, a place like Milwaukee. I think of my own grandsons who have not been part of team sports, and how much more, you know, they could get if they were on a team and get that kind of structured activity. It's not for every kid, don't get me wrong, but Earl, I'm betting that it was kind of the dawning of a new realization for some of those kids yesterday that, you know, they want to do something that involves teams like this.
Well, I'll tell you, it's what really is critically important about what you just said is the person who runs the organization. And there clearly are some people who don't understand that it's about children and not about them. And so I realized that in the 20 years that I ran my league, that it was about children and that we had to focus on children and not the adults the parents and the coaches who sometimes would become wayward. But the lessons that I learned in sports go far beyond me and what I've been doing and in your lifespan and my lifespan. It can go back, you know, centuries, the importance of organized activities for young people.
We're talking to Earl Ingram, who also, along with the football camp and all that he does, also has a podcast series here on Civic Media. The podcast is called What's Going On with Earl Ingram. And it was Luke Mathers who pointed out to me the other day that there is a dedicated page to the podcast at the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us. You can just click shows in the top banner or go to civicmedia.us/shows. And at this point, I think I see 6 episodes of the podcast that have gone up so far. I know it, we talked very early on about the one which is an interview with Dr. Howard Fuller. But can you tell us just a bit about a couple of these other episodes and, you know, why you decided to do them?
Well, you know, I'm kind of in a partnership with the Medical College of Wisconsin. And I think it's critically important that having these platforms that especially many of the people who listen have physical ailments. And so I had one podcast that I brought on a specialist who talked about high blood pressure and stroke. And May was High Blood Pressure and Stroke Month. Yesterday, I did a podcast with a urologist who, it's not up yet, but it'll be up soon, with a urologist who talks about prostate cancer. And so we really get into those things more so than what people normally hear in passing, but these are critical issues. People are dying and they need to understand that there's prevention, but there's also the earlier you catch something, the more likely it is in today's science and advancements in healthcare that you can prolong your life if you're just aware of it. So a lot of what I'm going to be doing is dealing with the Medical College of Wisconsin and all the myriad of doctors and specialists that they have. I'm also going to deal with some politics. I'm also going to be dealing, you know, with some very dedicated people who have dedicated their lives to serving others.
We definitely see that through an episode on walking into Black History with the NAACP. And, you know, also on the lighter side, Milwaukee in the movie scene is one of your more recent episodes that you did as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'll tell you, there's some coming up where there's some young men who, through just great philanthropic commitment, by the Daniels family, just a tremendous family that I'm going to do a series on. And they have taken somewhere over the last 25 years, I'd say at least 500 young boys from the city of Milwaukee, traveled the world, and they become just outstanding ambassadors all over this country. They've gone to major universities, and they've made a commitment to come back to the city of Milwaukee and dedicate their lives to making things better. I'm really excited about that podcast and the stories that are happening with those young men, what they've done. It's really should be a national story. I want to make sure that we capture that.
That's awesome. And again, you can catch that in Earl's podcast, What's Going On with Earl Ingram, and head over to the Civic Media website to learn more about that. Earl, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for the visit this week.
All right. On my way to see the grave digger.
All right. Good luck. Have a great time with the camp. Always a pleasure. So All right. He has a lot of fun. Let me answer a question about that, because we got it on the text line about the show, about Earl's show, from John in Oshkosh. Says, is there a link on the app? Not a link to that specific podcast, but if you're using the Civic Media app, here's how to go about doing it. Down in the lower right corner, down at the bottom, it says home and my station, because you can pick a home station, and more. Click on the more button, and then one of the options is about Civic Media. And when you click about Civic Media, it takes you to the website. From there, go to the main menu, click on Shows, and you'll see Earl's podcast and all the others that Civic Media provides to us as well. A local update is next for some of you. Others will talk to Melissa Baldoff and Climate Check, and then Senator Kelderoy is coming up in 15 minutes, live from Lake Wissota here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You're listening to 540 WAUK, Milwaukee's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Ever since I started the recombobulation area, I've written an in-depth breakdown of every new edition of the Marquette University Law School poll. The newest poll asks about a range of topics, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term, where people stand on Donald Trump's economic policies, and a host of issues relating to the state budget. The poll paints a picture of a polarized Wisconsin. Many people are very dug into their partisan camps, which is perhaps to be expected in the most evenly divided state in the nation. But there are a number of issues polled that do have the support of more than two-thirds of Wisconsin voters. Those include extending Medicaid coverage for new moms, legalizing marijuana, making major increases in state aid for special education, providing mental health services in schools, allowing citizen-led ballot initiatives, and banning cell phones in schools. What do most of these issues have in common? They are policies being advanced by Democrats in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Hey, Wisconsin, it's construction season, and the Wisconsin DOT wants to help you safely navigate work zones. Check 511WI.gov or download the app for road work or closures on your route. Know before you go with 511 Wisconsin, sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
Let's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the Founding Fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we are still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. I'm Greg Bach, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. I'll let you in on a little secret here at Civic Media. Sometimes we on the air need a break, a vacation, and that's what Maggie Dawn took this week for the 4th of July. In her stead, Matt Rothschild and Angela Lang stepped into the big chairs, and man, oh man, they have a discussion about patriotism in this country, how it can possibly lead to nationalism in this country, and what the 4th of July means to different individuals here in America. But first, they kick it off with an update of who Angela saw at Summerfest this year.
Who'd you see at Summerfest?
Megan Thee Stallion.
I was.
It was a really, really good show. High energy. I don't know how she does it. Really good time. The Journal Sentinel had a really good kind of write-up of the concert and everything, too. Her opening act wasn't able to be there due to, like, travel or weather-related travel, but it was still a really good time. We saw some folks in front of us that had T-shirts that said Seniors for Megan, and it was really cool to see, you know, all sorts of different folks come out and see her and have a good time.
It was one of her first concerts of the season, is what I read in the Journal Sentinel.
Yep. Good time. Good show.
Oh, that's neat. I was in the Chicago suburbs for 24 hours or 28 hours over the weekend visiting my two brothers and two sisters, and we had a lot of fun. We went to an Italian restaurant in Highwood, which is on the North Shore. It's a restaurant that's been open for 100 years, and my family, I remember going, you know, when I was a little kid, so I've been going for six decades to this, and I had an image of my dad the last time he went there. He literally was crawling up the steps to get into that little restaurant, so it was fun to be there. We had a good time.
Nice.
Do you have any special plans for the July 4th weekend?
I don't. I might check out some different events. I see that there's kind of like a People's Independence Day that some local organizations are putting on. Just kind of, you know, sit in this moment if people don't feel like the 4th of July is something that they resonate with. But for me, I'm just going to hang out with friends and enjoy the weather, hopefully. I haven't looked to see what the weather forecast is like. Hopefully it's nice and just spend some time outside.
Makes sense to me. I want to ask our listeners how you are sitting in this moment, how you are feeling about the country, how you are feeling about patriotism right now. I went to a friend's open house party last night, and one of the people there said, you know, what happened to our country? And I get that a lot when I'm visiting with people. So the number to call here is 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Give us a call or a text, and we'll try to air it here on the air and bounce around between me and Angela and you just to see where you're at on this. For me, patriotism has always been kind of a tricky concept because I understand from my studies that patriotism itself can lead to its toxic cousin nationalism, and that it can cause a lot of damage. And I remember an article Howard Zinn wrote for the Progressive, where I was the editor, back in, I think, 2006 or something, where he said, you know, put away your flags. Patriotism's too dangerous because it turns into nationalism. Nationalism leads to war, and war kills a lot of people. So, you know, there's something to that argument. On the other hand, you know, I think that the most successful way to do activism, or one of the most successful appeals of activists, is to appeal to the better ideals of this country. And I love those ideals. You know, I love life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. I love, you know, the First Amendment. I love a lot of the stuff in our founding documents. I love, you know, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, which I memorized as a kid. And so all these founding ideals are worth celebrating, and we can't surrender all that stuff. We need to uphold it and then make our government uphold them too. That's the problem right now, the way I see it. But, you know, when this woman asked me what country are we living in, I had to say, you know, it's not the country of our ideals. It's, you know, we're not supposed to kidnap and send people to prison overseas. We're not supposed to throw people in jail for expressing their political views. We're not supposed to grab people off the street because of the color of their skin. We're not supposed to have the Marines, you know, in our major cities. We're not supposed to have a president bombing any country he wants, anytime he wants, though that's been happening, you know, since World War II. So, you know, it's a strange time to be an alert person who understands the risks of nationalism, understands the power of this country, understands the negative currents that we're all swimming in right now. So it makes July 4th kind of tricky. So how are you sitting with it?
Yeah, it's strange, right? Because I think, you know, for me, as I've gotten older and older, I've felt less excited for the 4th of July. And I think there's a lot of Black folks that I know that resonate with that feeling of, you know, why celebrate a country that doesn't feel like it celebrates or even likes us or puts up with us. So a lot of folks have said that, you know, Juneteenth is Black folks' Independence Day. And so I've often felt like a disconnect from the 4th of July. But this also feels a little bit different because there are these things that are magnified in ways that we've never seen, this different level of fascism that we've never seen, and authoritarianism that I think is incredibly scary and overwhelming to think about. And also at the same time, reflecting that, you know, I have mixed feelings when people say, oh, I don't recognize this country, or this is not what the United States is. And I'm like, in some cases in history, it actually is, though. And so while some of these things are new to us, we also know that there have been communities that have been marginalized for years that often already struggled with what Independence Day looked like for them.
You can hear the rest of this conversation by going to civicmedia.us/shows. Look for the Maggie Dawn Show, and you can find an archive of her episodes going back months. So get that in your life, download those episodes, and listen to them whenever you can.
You've been listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, I'm Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 8:29.
Listening to Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. 540 WAUK.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 540 WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Law enforcement from across the state will descend on Waukesha County Friday. Preparations are underway for the funeral of Milwaukee police officer Kendall Corder, who was killed in an ambush June 26th. Visitation and funeral services will be held at Elmbrook Church in Brookfield, followed by a 10-mile processional to the Wisconsin Memorial Park. Officials expect a significant turnout and say the officer's final resting place, chosen by his family, overlooks a memorial honoring other public servants. A Whitefish Bay Republican is in the governor's race. Bill Berrien, a Navy SEAL veteran and business leader, has entered the governor's contest. In his announcement, Berrien said his campaign will focus on conservative principles, manufacturing revitalization, and opposition to the current governor's policies. He's the latest Republican to join the primary, alongside Washington County Executive Josh Shulman. Governor Evers hasn't yet said whether he plans to run again. Wisconsin was one of the 50 that didn't have one. Now with a new budget, we do. Joanne Krulatz has more.
The governor's newest budget will include $5 million a year to go towards a state film office and creating film and TV production tax credits. Action Wisconsin founder Katie Heil says Wisconsin was missing out on plenty of opportunities because it didn't have a film office or tax incentives. Heil says having the credits will also help attract and retain the type of talent that usually had to leave the state in order to pursue a career in film or television. Prior to the governor including it in his budget, Wisconsin was one of just three states that didn't have a film office.
And that's news on 540 WAUK. I'm Stuart J. Waddles. News at the top and bottom of the hour, or anytime at waukradio.com.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Actor Mark Ruffalo has taken shots at podcaster Joe Rogan, insinuating that Rogan is late to the game with his ICE raid outrage. The Kenosha-born Ruffalo said it's a little late now to pretend like Project 2025 didn't exist and wasn't the playbook all along, saying about Rogan, you are either not that smart or not that dumb. It's hard to tell at this point. Ruffalo has a host of projects set to drop in the coming months, and despite a solid performance as always, is still probably trying to forget he was part of Mickey 17. AMC Theaters recently announced they would play more commercials before movies to help offset a budget deficit. That's probably not something most moviegoers wanted to hear, but in a move in the other direction, beginning July 8th, the movie chain will offer 50% off tickets on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. The chain has also announced they will offer discount popcorn and soda on those days. This will allow the movie-going public to save a few bucks while still trying to add a few extra pounds. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin has summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Plenty of sunshine today. We'll get to 78 for a high this afternoon with wind out of the northeast at 5 to 15. Clear tonight, 63. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, 78. We do have a chance of scattered thunderstorms on Friday with a high of 84. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 69.
Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
In sitcoms, when someone has a problem, they just blurt it out and move on.
Well, I lost my job and my parakeet is missing. How was your day?
But the real world is different. Managing life's challenges can be overwhelming. So, what do? We get support. The Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council have mental health resources available for you at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. See how much further you can go when you take care of your mental health.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as Pat Kreitlow of Mornings with PK and Trigvi Olsen, Senior Advisor at LP, joins us to discuss national and state issues and a what's worse on pizza.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
All right, it is time to continue the longest-running fight here at Civic Media. And the Civic Media folks, we're buddies, we're pals, we all get along. But there are some fights, and the current fight between me and Todd Alba is which one can have Senator Kelda Royz on as a co-host, you know, most often in the future when she decides she doesn't want to keep doing this politics thing all the time because she's so good at explaining the news to us all. Senator Kelda Royz, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm so happy to be with you, Pat. Nice to have someone fighting over me because my kids certainly are not interested in that.
I understand. Yep. Yep. Saw you on with Todd the other day. And by the way, Todd and I will be together at the Northern Wisconsin State Fair for his show, 2 to 4 p.m. Thursday and Friday. So if you're in the Chippewa County area, come on out to the fairgrounds of the Northern Wisconsin State Fair and see us Thursday and Friday from 2 to 4 at the fair. So you've been with Todd, and you've put out a statement as well on, you know, the most recent Supreme Court decision. We're going to get to the state budget matter in just a moment here. But I, of course, as you know, have been fascinated by yesterday's Supreme Court decision because of all the nerd stuff behind it.
Yes.
It is about, you know, the decision was about, you know, the so-called conversion therapy. And there's a lot that can be said about the ways that that is used to essentially terrorize, you know, young people and the LGBTQ community. But the reason for it, the reason for that decision is one of several instances where Republicans have abused trust in the legislature. There was gerrymandering the maps. There's holding up all the nominations. There's abusing the Joint Finance Committee to hold back money that was already approved. And then there's this one that's a bit more obscure, but, you know, a bill becomes a law, but a law only becomes the law through the rules that are written to enforce the law. And Kelda, you know firsthand, we both have worked with that particular Administrative Rules Committee. Mm-hmm. That committee is not the backstop that it used to be for the few times that a rule maybe was, you know, out of line. The Republicans are using that committee in a far different way now, aren't they?
That's right. I mean, it's yet another example of how Republicans have been using their ill-gotten gerrymandered power to unconstitutionally put themselves not just in the legislative branch, but to try to override what the governor and the executive branch are charged with doing. And so the court's decision, well, it has the effect of clearing the way to make sure that young people are not subjected to these abusive practices like conversion therapy. The mechanism is that the legislature doesn't get to have the final say. The governor's the one who decides whether to sign laws or veto them. It's not the legislature.
I love the fact, too, that as Republicans are caterwauling about this, they're again saying, oh, Tony Evers wants to make himself a king. And they'd say the same thing about the partial veto powers and everything, when it actually is the legislature that has tried to turn into a de facto monarchy by saying, nope, we're going to take budget power away from the governor. And, you know, even if we don't have the votes to override his veto, we're going to find other ways to sabotage what he is otherwise legally able to do. This is a party that's run the legislature for 14 years that is long overdue for some reform, even if it has to come from a state Supreme Court.
Absolutely. And to be clear, like this, you know, the court decisions that have been smacking down the legislature have not just been the liberals on the court, right? A lot of these decisions have been 7-0, 6-1. And yesterday's decision is another victory for Wisconsinites who want to have a government that is responsive to their needs, right? To us as the people, and not just to the right-wing special interests that would love to see, you know, the most extreme elements of the Republican Party controlling everything.
And I think, as I mentioned earlier, looking back at these past few decisions here, and I have been clear, I did not agree with the Supreme Court's reasoning on limiting the partial veto powers, but I get it. I understand what they were saying. But here's my larger point. I think yesterday's ruling on the rulemaking process, unrigging the gerrymandered maps. Mm-hmm. I feel like now with this progressive majority, and yeah, sometimes it's actually more than 4-3, sometimes it's 5-2, sometimes it's 7-0. But I feel like this progressive majority on the court is actually leading Wisconsin state government down a path of reform that you can't abuse the rules process, and that a governor can't, you know, push the envelope on veto powers. This seems like the most fair-minded court we've had in my memory.
Yeah, it's really heartening to see. You know, I remember when I was growing up and when I was a law student, the Wisconsin Supreme Court was really held in very, very high regard. And it was looked at as even on par with the U.S. Supreme Court in terms of the quality of the reasoning. And that was Shirley Abrahamson and Ann Walsh Bradley, you know, who were really intellectual lights on that court. And it is gratifying to see that this court is helping to make Wisconsin a place where everyone can thrive. And they really are, they're not a rubber stamp for one side or the other. And I think that's very healthy. That's what we ultimately want to have in a democracy.
Yeah. We talked in the last hour with Heather Dubois-Bornon from the Wisconsin Public Education mm-hmm. Network and Corrine Hendrickson about their unhappiness with what was in the state budget agreement. In terms of public education, in terms of childcare, all of that is well known. You have explained your reasons for your vote on the bill as well. So I don't want to dwell on it too much longer, but I knew you were the right person to help us pivot from here, because you can be against this budget, but you can also understand why some of your Democratic colleagues supported it. And Absolutely. So how do you go forward in helping voters understand that there is frustration among the progressive community right now, including with each other to a degree, but those aren't the people you should be taking your frustrations out on next year.
Right. And in fact, I think to be fair, it isn't just progressives who are frustrated, right? Education, public school funding has been the number one issue that we've heard about for many years on the budget committee. And it's been a long standing, you know, for the last 15 years, our kids have not gotten an inflationary increase in schools. And when inflation goes up and you don't get an increase, that's a cut. In addition to, of course, the devastating cuts of the Walker years. So our kids have really been getting shortchanged. And people have every right to be angry and frustrated about that. I'm angry and frustrated about that. That said, it is better than no budget at all. And the slight increase in special education funding is going to be helpful to many school districts. It will help offset the no increase in general aids, which is going to be devastating. You know, 2/3 of districts are going to have less money than they had last year because of the general school aid being held flat. But I think that we have to look beyond. If we want things to change, then we cannot continue to empower Robin Voss and the extreme Republican Party. We have got to have a Democratic trifecta. And that's really what I'm going to be focusing on and working towards. Ultimately, we can fund our schools appropriately. Our kids deserve better schools, but that's only going to happen if we have a Democratic trifecta.
And so our guest last hour talked about a rally that will be held at the Capitol a little after 9 a.m. This Friday, day after tomorrow. You're going to be there as well?
I am. Childcare is something I'm really passionate about, not just because it's important for our workforce and economy, but because every single kid deserves the best possible start in life. That's when so much brain development happens, and it shouldn't be rationed based on how much money your parents have.
Senator Kelderoys is our guest here, and let's turn to where the legislature goes from here. The budget's passed. That's the one bill that, you know, theoretically always has to pass, and then everything is extra. I noticed yesterday it was like somebody unloaded a dump truck of bill introductions. Now that the budget's done, everybody is circulating ideas for new bills. So there'll be some time in the fall and the next spring before everybody goes out to campaign again. Are there things that you think now beyond the state budget are going to get done, which obviously would have to be done in a bipartisan fashion? Or is it more the pessimistic view that very little is going to get done for the rest of this session?
Well, you know, I always try to be optimistic because I think it's important. If you're going to work in politics, you have to, you know, hope is really what drives you. But I think realistically, it's going to be very difficult. The Republicans are in disarray. They are unable to govern with these narrower majorities, and they see the writing on the wall that they are very likely to be in the minority in the next session. And I think that's exacerbated some of the conflicts between different members of the Republican caucus. That said, you know, there are a lot of big issues that I'm working on that I think should and could have bipartisan support. I think about, you know, regulating AI. This is a huge emerging issue that a lot of state legislators are not paying attention to yet. And it's already transforming our society. We really need to be thinking about this. Things like data privacy, right? At a time when the federal government is abusing our data and really weaponizing forces in the government against our own people, we need to be very careful about what data is accessible. I think a cell phone ban, I would love to see a bell-to-bell cell phone ban in schools. I think there's a lot of bipartisan support for that. Regulating social media and the way that social media can influence and harm our kids. So there, you know, housing issues, there's a lot that I'm passionate about where I think we can have hopefully some bipartisan cooperation.
Here's one that won't happen, but it should, and that would be the Medicaid expansion, given Absolutely. What the Trump administration and Congress just decided to do to Medicaid. But yeah. I vented on this yesterday, so I just want to give you the chance to vent as well, except I can vent at one of your colleagues. Maybe you don't want to. But I read this from the Channel 13 website yesterday. I'm going to read it again. State Senator Jesse James, Republican of Thorpe, said the biggest ticket item was increasing the hospital assessment and access payments to the federal maximum and reinvesting that money back into the hospitals. This untapped federal money is an additional pathway to help support our hospitals, to which I add rhetorically, well, Senator, what the hell do you think the Medicaid expansion was?
Exactly. I mean, honest to God, I don't know how Republicans get away with calling themselves fiscally responsible when for years they have rejected hundreds of millions of dollars coming into the state every year. Wisconsin taxpayers could pay less to cover more people. And instead, we are paying to cover people in Illinois and California and all these red states that have expanded Medicaid. All of our health insurance costs go up when we have more uninsured people. Our rural hospitals and care centers struggle. Nursing homes close because we're not able to get them the revenue they need. They have too much uncompensated care when people are uninsured or underinsured. And Republicans have rejected over and over. And that means that about 90,000 Wisconsinites have gone without the health care that they need. It's bad for our economy. It's bad for our state budget. And it's, of course, bad for our health.
And then finally, how much on pins and needles do you feel, and not just you, all kinds of folks in the legislature, folks outside of the legislature, as you wait for things to happen, obviously starting with Governor Evers making a decision on running, but there's congressional seats, there's assembly reps running for state senate, which opens up an assembly race to happen. And what does that feel like knowing that, you know, while you think about your own future, whether you want to stay in the state senate or do something else, do you feel stuck in political limbo right now?
Well, it's an exciting time. I mean, I think, you know, the governor should take the time that he and Kathy need to think about this and make a decision. It's a really momentous one, right? 2026 is going to be, I think, a huge year for Democrats. It's a big, big opportunity. So if he decides it's the right time to pass the torch, I have no doubt that we will be able to hold the governor's office. But that's his decision to make. And I think I'm just really excited because I am working on having a Democratic trifecta. And we had the launch of a great state Senate candidate, Jenna Jacobson, mm-hmm. this week. I think we'll have more in the coming weeks, and I'm focused on helping them win.
Trifecta. Get used to hearing that word a lot and the importance of it here in Wisconsin. Senator Calderoy, it's always great. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Take care, Pat. Thank you.
All right. A local update is next for some of you. Others, we'll have some final news and notes from Lake Wasota, including James Kelly in the Civic Media Newsroom in Chippewa Falls. All coming up next. You're up north.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. New Mexico rolled out its automatic voter registration system July 1st, allowing citizens to conveniently register to vote or change residency information while at the DMV. Across the country, New Hampshire's legislature may burden its elderly and disabled absentee voters by requiring copies of ID when voting by mail and citizenship papers when registering by mail. New Mexico passed a sweeping voting rights bill, HB 4, in 2023. Among its provisions was automatically registering citizens to vote at the motor vehicle division, previously only an option. AVR has been successful in other states in registering younger voters and may expand registrations of the state's native voters as well. Local election officials will send newly registered voters their voting districts and precincts and how to opt out if they choose. New Hampshire, despite having next to no fraud, abuse, or non-citizen voting, has gone the other direction. Legislators sent bills to Governor Kelly Ayotte mandating proof of citizenship be sent with absentee registrations and that absentee voters must include copies of an approved ID or have their signature notarized. Such onerous rules adversely affect seniors and disabled voters who may not be able to make copies, and younger voters and college students who may not have ready access to those documents. Voter fraud and non-citizen voting are extremely rare, and such rules serve to keep more eligible voters from voting than ineligible ones. I'm Brian Beal.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
I get why you, Senator Royce, were a no vote on this budget. I think the people that voted no on this were standing up for public education.
I think that's exactly right. We heard from people loud and clear in this budget cycle and 2 years ago, the number one priority that people asked for, whether they called, emailed, or showed up at the public hearings, they want our schools funded. Our kids deserve better schools. They have been underfunded for decades, and it is time for us to prioritize public education.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app, The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 14. Till 6 p.m. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. I'm Greg Bach, and here's the update on what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. By now, you may know that the Wisconsin State Legislature put together a budget and was agreed upon by both sides as well as the governor, signing it into law this past week. But if you've been listening to Civic Media, you know through our conversations with guests or with you, the listeners, it is a controversial topic because not everyone is happy about it. That is why Maggie Dawn, along with Matt Rothschild, sat down with State Senator and Minority Leader Diane Hesselbein, who was actually in the room having the discussions and made the compromise on the budget, to talk about some of the wins that are inside this bill.
Let's talk about what this budget has gotten done for Wisconsinites that was absolutely essential. There are a few key improvements that will return manyfold to Wisconsinites. Tell us a little bit about that.
So one of the things we saw right away that Joint Finance Committee voted on is special ed reimbursement. We have been pushing, Jill Underley, DPI superintendent, was pushing for 90%. The governor put 60% in his budget, and the Joint Finance Committee put a special ed reimbursement at 35% the first year, 37% the second year. Now vouchers get 90% special ed reimbursement rate. So honestly, you know, we should all be doing 100%, to be honest, and actually pay for the education that all kids need. But the Republicans made it clear they're going to do 35 the first year, 37 the second year. And we were able to push the Republicans to 40% the first year and 45 the second year. That was a hard negotiation, and that was not easy because they were just willing to have just pittance for special ed reimbursement. So if that
you,
was a win.
If you can, State Senator, please explain to people what you mean by a special ed reimbursement. Like what's getting reimbursed, and why is this so critically important? And why the hell would a voucher school get 90% if our public schools are only getting 45%?
Yeah, so special ed reimbursement is they know how much they would get for people that have an individualized education process. Maybe you have a kiddo that might need help reading, they're dyslexic, they have some learning challenge or physical challenge, and so they need extra support throughout the day so that they can do their level best. And they figure out what that level is and how much that funding they need, and they only get 30% back of whatever that costs in public schools right now. And in the voucher unaccountable schools, they get 90% back. So they already have a leg up on our public schools. So Governor Evers proposed 60%, trying to get it more in line. And we were fortunate to get 40 and 45%. And it's unfortunate. I really wish we could do 100% for every single kiddo who needs help, because, you know, different kids have different learning needs, different things they need. And we should just be paying for it instead of just nickel and diming them.
What happens? So who picks up the tab? How does the school system make up for the other 65% of the funding need for each child that's in special education?
Thank you for asking. And I think sometimes we get in the weeds and we forget that, like, people that are listening to the radio are like, why is that a thing? Why is that politicians fight over this? And why don't we just give kids what they need to succeed? The school district picks up the rest. So literally property taxes are raised because they have to pay for these students that have these special needs. And lots of times that's one of the reasons why we go to referendum for operating referendum year after year, is because the state is no longer funding what we should be for education, special education, and other education. So it's really putting property tax people and everybody in the state of Wisconsin on the hook. So, including those that pay rent, right? Because they also have to pay for it.
Of course, your rent reflects the property tax levels. If property taxes have to go up because your school district requires a referendum because the state refuses to fairly fund special education, that we all pay for that. Again, across the educational spectrum, early childhood education, which is another way to say childcare, that's what we're talking about there. There's earmarked funding in the compromise to help four-year-olds get school ready. This is all to the benefit, because otherwise, guess who ends up footing the bill for all of this? And again, the ball rolling downhill is your local school district, which means you, the taxpayer. So again, key in that early childhood education. We talked about special education in our K-12 programs, the funding, replacement rate increase, and finally the university system. With all of that, all of those epically important improvements in mind, Senator, some of your Democratic colleagues have been quite vocal in their opposition, both online and in press releases. And I have watched people compromise over legislation and battle over budgets at the local level for many years. This is tough stuff. I want you to address people that are speaking out against the budget.
Yeah, well, one thing I would say is elections matter. And I want to be sure to just take a few seconds to say thank you to Matt Rothschild for talking about fair maps for so long.
Yes.
Because we've had fair maps, we were able to flip 4 seats. Right. Last election cycle in a tough date night for Democrats. You know, they delivered a win in Wisconsin to Donald Trump, but also Tammy Baldwin. And as we're seeing the mess of everything going on in Trump, you know, the Trump was winning state after state. We were winning state Senate seats that night. So we were being like, oh, my gosh, this is great. Oh, my gosh, what's happening in Pennsylvania? Oh, what's going on there? So elections matter. And I think one thing we heard from the campaign trail and all these people in purple districts heard loud and clear is, can't you all work together? Why is it so divisive? Why does it have to be like this? So when I was invited to the room, I worked with every single senator in my caucus to say, these are the things I think we should try to get. This is my list. What do you think of this? What else am I not saying? What am I missing here? I think in the past, it was more of a top-down thing, but I am very much a believer in a big tent that I want everybody giving me their best advice going forward. So we went from 11 Democrats to 15. There's 18 Republicans in the state Senate. So I got to be at the table to negotiate the best deal we could get for the state of Wisconsin. Did I get everything I wanted? No. Did the Republicans? No. And I've been watching, you know, some of my colleagues have been complaining about the process or the final budget, but I've also seen on right-wing media, they have been very angry at the Republicans, thinking that, you know, Tony Evers did a whole run around the Republican Party. So they're not happy with everything either. And maybe that's the sign of a true compromise. We have some things we can hold on to as beacons of light. They got a tax cut, and maybe in the middle, Wisconsin won.
I would suggest you listen to the entire discussion that Maggie has with State Senator Dianne Hesselbein regarding the state budget, because it is an important one, and to know all the facts is always paramount here at Civic Media. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. You're going to have yourself a great Wednesday. I know it. I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's 8:59.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. More than 160 people are now reported missing in deadly flooding in South Texas. Finding them may be difficult. CBS's Janet Chamlian is in Kerrville.
We walked the banks of the Guadalupe River, and there is so much debris that still hasn't been searched. It's not going to be weeks. It could be months.
The official death toll stands at 110. A man and two children were swept away by floodwaters, triggered by monsoon rains in a popular mountain resort village in southern New Mexico. Ruidoso spokeswoman Carrie Gladden.
I don't think it was a shock because I think we were prepared. But, you know, you certainly don't want to see it happen on this scale.
The week-old municipal workers' strike is over in Philly. Piles of garbage should be gone from city streets soon. CBS's Brandon Goldner.
What's particularly concerning for residents is just getting these sites cleaned up, especially because of all the problems they've been causing. We've heard from children who say it's just been too stinky outside to even play around.
CBS News Brief. I'm Derek.